show Latin Waves. Latin Waves is an internationally syndicated weekly program made available through campus and community stations and available out to the world at www.latinwavesmedia.com. Visit Latin Waves Media to hear previous shows, to access resources, or support our efforts towards social change via community project engagement. Thank you and bye for now.
It's time to catch the beat from Market Street on WEFT Champaign 90.1 FM. Your community radio station is in the heart of the action in downtown Champaign, and Catch the Beat brings highlights of local news, arts, culture, and issues to pay attention to. I'm your host, Cope Cumston. I'm very pleased to welcome to the show Henry Redcloud, a chief of the Oglala Lakota tribe, born and raised on the Pine Ridge Reservation in South Dakota, and his son, John Redcloud, to tell us about a remarkable program, Redcloud Renewable. Your work focuses on energy and sustainability for Native American communities through building solar installation, sustainable building practices, and weatherization techniques. Now, I was introduced to Redcloud Renewable through the concert here in Urbana by Alice DiMicelli last October that WEF sponsored. It raised money for a particular project of Redcloud Renewables, your Tuyuha housing. They're very beautiful. They're dome houses made out of cellular concrete, which is a powerful material for insulating against South Dakota winters. And at that concert, your director of development, Carrie Lasso, told us about the project and about Redcloud Renewable in general. And you focus, rather than providing services of energy efficiency to Native people, you do your work through education and through building community. And so now I want to turn the conversation over to you, John and Henry. What would you like us to know about the work of Redcloud Renewable and what your specific focuses are now?
Yes, greetings one and all in the beautiful city of Champaign. I've been there, and greetings to all the people that I met there, all the friendships, partnerships that emerged out of my visit there. Redcloud Renewable is a workforce development organization. We bring the technical support around solar, grid-tied, battery-based, standalone. We bring the technical support around site assessment, and then with the site assessment then leads to the design and then the implementation. And then we offer operating O&M, operating maintenance. We're working with, there's 574 federally recognized tribes. And then within that, we're working with 70 tribes now. I've been doing this for over 20 years. I met an array of First Nations people, Indigenous people. And so we're creating that workforce. We're working around energy efficiency, as well as these tiny foamcrete homes. All of them is based around training. People come in, get the know-how to do what they're interested in, and then take that home and start there at home, maybe solar energy efficiency with these, you know, tiny homes as well. So that's what we do here, and we look forward for those in the audience, please look at our webpage, redcloudrenewable.org, and see what we're doing and see how we can partner up, see what we can do together. It's that time that we need to start partnering up in order to move forward. Partnerships are tremendous, and partnerships are very important. So saying a prayer, first of all, the entities, organizations, individuals come together, say a prayer, and then move forward. That way, everybody is on the same page. Everybody knows what everybody's doing, and we're moving together. Unity is what we need to have, you know, today. So with that, we have this wonderful project happening, which is going to be a regional solar training facility with all the other trainings underneath that. We acquired a 160-acre parcel of land, and we're going to build on that and build this regional training facility, a workforce development, you know, facility. So we're welcoming one and all. You know, stop on up. If you're ever in the South Dakota region visiting the Black Hills, stop in, see us. We're only an hour south of the Black Hills. So thank you very much.
Is this training facility on the Pine Ridge Reservation?
Huh? Yes, it is. It's right up against the Badlands. So actually, it's from the Black Hills, it's probably 30 minutes. It's on the northwest corner of the reservation here.
And you have a particular philosophy about training people. The people who come to learn what you have to teach about energy efficiency live together and eat together and really create a community. Can you tell us a bit about how you run your workshops?
Sure. We have a course that's 160 hours, basically 4 weeks. And so students arrive here. We have a dormitory. Students then get, you know, comfortable. We have a kitchen that'll feed up to 100 people, and we have classroom space. And then we have a meeting room space upstairs. So students are then get settled in and enjoy a restful night with 3 meals the next day. We got breakfast, lunch, and dinner being offered. So they're, as well as the instructors, they stay here on site too. We got the smaller pods, we got the aircrete, you know, domes that our instructors, you know, stay in. Back several years ago, let me see, 12 years ago, we initiated this here program that we call the T4 program. The T4 is Tribal Train the Trainer program, followed up by the National Certification Test. So these natives that went and came through the T4 program then was able to pass the national certification. There are instructors, native instructors leading native students. And so it's, natives to natives, you know, it's really nice here. It's really, we sure enjoy the, you know, trainings around that, but that's what we do here.
What are some of the specific skills that you train in, and what does the certification allow people to do?
People walk away with their certification basically being rooftop ready or ground mount ready, being able to learn about the components, doing half the time inside the class, learning every site assessment. What do you do? How do you do a design work? Then you learn about the components, from the panel, from the racking to the panel, to the inverter, to the breaker panel, the size of wiring. All of this stuff is really important. Within those, you know, courses, we offer the OSHA 10. On one of those days, we offer the OSHA 10. So safety is, so we have a beautiful lab here, roof mounts and ground mounts. And we got standalone systems and battery-based systems.
And this is for solar power?
This is all for solar power, yeah. The students then come in and learn all the components, design work, and then the next 2 weeks is implementation. They come out to the lab, and the students are broke up, 15 students per class. The students are then broke up into 3 mini labs, which then the students start to put all of this together, put all the components together and commission it. Once the, you know, commissioning's done, then the students dismantle it. They, you know, take it apart, and then they all switch. They all switch over to the roof mount, to the ground mount, to a string inverter, as well as the micro inverters. They learn, they're basically rooftop ready, and they get a certificate from RCR, from Red Cloud Renewable, in partnership with Solar Energy International. We offer them a certificate, and they're pretty much rooftop ready. They can go to work. So we in turn, RCR, we know quite a few people in a megawatt industry, which are installing huge solar farms. We and then contact them. They're always looking for workers. And then we send our students out there. We give them the contact, and away they go. They then have a job and being able to implement what they learned here. So,
and is that work limited to work on reservations, or is it work generally across the country, anywhere that these solar installations are being made?
Anywhere in a country. Currently, there's some solar happening within indigenous communities here in the Northern Plains. Maybe, John, you want to elaborate on that?
Yeah, it's spread applicability. We are responding to kind of the energy movement that was in this country that began with the last administration, the Infrastructure Improvement and Jobs Act, IIJA, and also the Inflation Reduction Act. And our model here, training model, is kind of going back to kind of to relate to the listenership here, is kind of a teach a person to fish rather than just give them fish. So our key metric, the one that we really hope to achieve on behalf of our program and the participants, is job placement. We'd like them to obtain family sustaining careers in renewable energy in the industry. Native American representation in the United States is right around 3%. So we'd like to improve on that. And I think some of the challenges participants have shared is lack of access to training programs. Funding, of course, is an issue. And then some are not quite as comfortable. I guess they find more comfort in a familiar surrounding. On our campus here on the Pine Ridge Reservation, the current iteration sits on 10 acres, and it's about, you know, 10 minutes from the tribal headquarters here in Pine Ridge. And on our campus, you will find a sweat lodge structure that students can participate in if they so choose. We have wood, there are rocks back there. That's an option for those who want spiritual balance. You know, we like to lead our, whenever we host visitors and such, we always have a drum group, local drum group, tribal members here that offer songs, honoring songs, prayer songs, and it's part of the staying in connection with the teachings that were passed down to us. So our training program offers that cultural relevance piece to some of the students, and they really appreciate that sense of familiarity and bringing back some of the feelings, the sights and the sounds and that of their own home communities. Many of them do come from communities not too dissimilar from Pine Ridge Indian Reservation. So lots of different socioeconomic issues, geographically isolated or remote from a lot of bigger cities. So they come here and they experience that, and they have a little bit of sense of familiarity. And then, as my dad was saying, they could look in front of the classroom and see tribal member, maybe from their same tribe or from a different tribe, but somebody that they can see in front leading, passing on that knowledge to them. So I think there's that sense of they can do it as well. It instills that intangible, like it makes it possible for them. So that's a pretty important part of our program and our offering here.
And you have a particular program to bring in women to these teams, right? Because gender representation, it was clear that not as many women were coming into these programs as you might wish. You have something called the Bridging Renewable Industry Divides in Gender Equality, or a Bridge Program. How do you reach out through that?
Thank you. Right. So we responded to data that came from the Interstate Renewable Energy Council, IREC, and they put out a solar job census every year. So we looked at the 2021 numbers and saw, again, Native American participation was around 3%. And then across the board, the solar installer participation for women was around 25-26%. And when you put those two numbers together, you come down to less than 1% of the industry has any involvement with Native American women. So when the Department of Energy Solar Energy Technologies Office put out a notification for funding through an initiative they called Advancing Equity Through Workforce Partnerships. So Red Cloud Renewable did apply, submitted a very lengthy submission with the budget, technical volume, summary of project objectives. It was very long and arduous process, but we were in the end selected to run this program for 3 calendar years at a cost to the taxpayers like yourself and myself, Cope, and many of your American listeners. Our taxpayer dollars are hard at work providing this opportunity, this bridge program, to the tune of $1.5 million. And a key feature of this programming was what we called wraparound services. Some of the barriers that stood in the way for some of the Native women coming from indigenous communities and even from urban communities was childcare. It's really expensive in this country. My research found that it was an obstacle. I'm not able to afford childcare so I can be away from my family or my home community for 4 to 5 weeks. So we wrote into the budget, we're going to provide childcare services in the form of a stipend. So, and we're not going to make it some particularly difficult process to navigate. If you have a sister, cousin, mother, uncle, brother, relative that's willing to care for your child or children in your absence, and we'll provide them with payment at the current going rate in your area for childcare. So that way they can find somebody and say, look, I'm going to be gone for, 4 to 5 weeks, but I can help offset some of the cost of childcare. That was I think really the hallmark feature of our program. And our success story, Cope, was with our first cohort. We had 12 participants. Some were mothers. We have some great pictures there online that we showed of the graduation. And of those 12, 10 are currently working in the solar industry, as most are solar installers. So that's about a 90% job placement rate.
That's about as good as it can get. How many people come through your programs a year now?
In the past, we've been able to run about 3 programs per year, and there's about 15 per class that we were running. And this year, we decided to be a bit more ambitious and respond to the need. So on our calendar, we have 9 trainings scheduled out this year, about 15 students each.
That's a big increase.
Right. So we're right around 135. We'd like to come through the doors and then, give them the skills necessary to go back to their home communities. Or most tribes, I think, are starting to get into solar through some of the federal initiatives, but many of the rural remote tribes are not involved at this stage. So some of the students understand they likely may have to commute long distances or possibly relocate unless their tribe kind of picks up that baton and begins to walk this renewable energy path. But that's our goal this year, is to have 135 students come through our doors and receive the training.
Who are the people who run your training programs?
Most of them are former graduates that came through. Like my dad mentioned, we had this tribal train the trainer program, T4, and we looked to them and to upskill them to be the instructors at the next level. Many of them are working in the industry or have had experience in the industry, running crews or working for different solar installation companies in different areas. I can mention one in particular, her name's Marie Kilswarrior. She was part of a crew in Minneapolis, Minnesota, Twin Cities. And she also worked, I think, in the Denver area as well as a solar installer. And she has a certification through the North American Board of Certified Energy Practitioners, NABCEP. So that gives her the experience. One, there's no substitute for it. And two, the knowledge base to stand in front of our classroom and be a confident instructor. And there are others that we look to as well from other reservations, Yankton Sioux Reservation here in South Dakota, and some of our own staff members here. We're also looking to continue to upskill so they can stand in front of the classroom and lead the labs.
And beyond solar installations, you do quite a bit more work in sustainability and energy conservation. You have a program of doing energy audits of existing buildings, right?
Mainly residential homes. Again, through the federal agency, DOE, we submitted a grant to them for a deep retrofit of 30 homes here. Our team here goes in and does energy audit and comes up with a checklist with that funding that we received from DOE. They gave us $1.9 million to do 30 homes, followed by solar installation. This is the first time ever with this kind of program. The RCR always believed that solar and weatherization energy efficiency walked hand in hand. Without the other, then you don't see the savings. So currently we're in the process of that. According to our calculations, we went in and did a energy audit for a family there, and their entire mobile home is electric. So we went in and was able to save them 30-35% on their kilowatt usage. So now we're going to come back with solar, and according to our design work and that, we're going to be able to save this homeowner 60-65% of their kilowatt usage. Again, bringing this forward, bringing all this forward as a workforce development, teaching people, sharing with the homeowners, really important, educating the homeowner around kilowatt usage, and also sharing around training people to do the solar installs, training people how to do an energy audit, a checklist. We have the blower door, we have infrared guns, we have everything that there is to do efficient weatherization program. We're going to be working with the tribes and bringing that forward as well, training them to do their own energy efficiency audits.
Can you tell us about the dome houses that you've designed? They're gorgeous from what I'm seeing, the photographs on your website. How were these designed, and how many of them have you actually been able to build?
So these, this type of build, you can, for your listening audience, can go on to, they can go on to the web and research cellular concrete, foamcrete, and this been out there for quite some time, but not in a dome farm. They're really hyper efficient in heating and cooling. So we then partnered with another nonprofit, and they had the idea, the design to do this. So in our partnership, we learned from them and start implementing. Today we have 1, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 of these. Out there, one to a family and three to families going to be moving in. The others are starter, demos that we built here before we went and, test it here before we went and took it out into the community. So now we're coming up with a newer, less cost design where actually there's a lot of elderly that are in need of homes. And they can't be going up and down the stairs. And so we eliminated the dome part and basically putting a flat roof on them. We have some being built now just to see what it's going to cost and how the efficiency is going to be. So we're building these flat roof design, which enables us. The current one, we started out, we have a 14-foot circular diameter. Then we went to a 18-foot, a 16-foot, then an 18-foot, and that was the widest that we can go with the dome. So now that we're eliminating the dome, now we can go 24-foot base diameter with two bump-out walls, one going to be a bedroom, the other one will be the shower, commode, hand sink, washer, dryer, hot water heater, electrical, and that. So we're pretty excited about offering more space. And then coming up with a flat roof, design. So we're looking forward to this year to building one for a family. We're currently fundraising right now for that project. It's going to entail more living space and a couple of rooms. It won't be so tight. The domes are nice, but you could only go so wide with a dome. With a flat roof system, then you can go 24-foot wide. That's a lot more room. with the two bump out walls, the bedroom plus the other room with all the other components, water, sewer, washer, dryer, electrical. So we're looking forward. We're currently fundraising on that. So if anybody out there can support us and support this family here, it would be great. Thank you.
Well, that's one of the important things I want to talk about as we come to the end of our time, is how people here in Champaign-Urbana can get involved and can support the work you're doing, because it's very exciting and innovative work. Give us an idea of what kind of community support you need, what you're looking for, and how people can contact you and find out what's going on.
Yeah, I would just like to add something to that, and then I'm going to turn it over to John. Within your respected community of Champaign, we were able to, when we got started here, we needed equipment. So Janet Guthrie out of the community of Champaign, she supported us. And she came, she visited, and she supported. She said, what do you need to move forward? So we needed a tractor. We needed a bobcat to help level ground, do all the groundwork. And lo and behold, she donated X amount of dollars so we could purchase this. So we could all save our backs and our arms and shoulders. That's been tremendous. You know, I just wanted to add that for, you know, Janet, maybe some of you listeners out there know her, talk with her. She's been here on the ground. She knows what it's about here. So,
and John, tell us about your overall outreach for funding and for participation in your project.
So our program, you know, we have the three pillars of our organization, and for your listenership out there, you know, across the globe, there in Champaign, Urbana, metropolitan area, Illinoisans out there, you know, our greatest support comes from word of mouth, people that believe in our story and understand kind of the importance of coming together with a unified purpose, and knowing, you know, there are a number of charities out there that do different types of projects, engage in different efforts, recognize that there's a need here. And our goal here is to reach out and have broad reaching support. Looking back on the history between the Native folks and the non-Native folks has not always been such a great one. And now we're at this new time where we can rewrite a new chapter for ourselves and look to a partnership. You know, we can look to putting our differences of the past aside and recognizing, you know, there's a way to heal and move forward together. And part of our efforts here is to be a conduit. You know, we like to be a messenger for not only the people of the Pine Ridge Indian Reservation, but for other indigenous communities around the country. And some are not on reservations. There are a great number of Native people who are in Denver metro area, the Cleveland area, the Los Angeles area. There's a great number of them, and they still have kinship here. They have ties to different reservations. So our best method is word of mouth. I would encourage listeners out there, if they have social media, go to our Facebook page, facebook.com/redcloudrenewable. We also have an Instagram page as well. You know, we have our website, of course, redcloudrenewable.org, and we're looking to just spread the awareness, share the information, share the link. Any support that we receive out there organically, you know, $50, that really goes a long way. That helps us purchase a set of meals for one day, you know, for some of our participants there. Helps us offset different costs as a 501c3. It's really an uncertain time in Washington. So we are pivoting, we are responding, and we are hopeful. We pray that the private sector philanthropy will pick up the slack. We don't know what's happening. The evolving geopolitical landscape is out of our control, but we must be in charge of our own destiny here. So that's how your supporters can help cope, or your listeners out there.
I so appreciate your coming and talking about your work.
Thank you so much.
That wraps up our time for this week's Catch the Beat. With my thanks to Henry and John Redcloud from the Pine Ridge Reservation in South Dakota for sharing your programs in Redcloud Renewable with training Native communities to build sustainable energy sources. I'd encourage listeners to go to their website, www.redcloudrenewable.org, To read more about the different programs they offer in solar installation, energy audits and retrofits, and building small houses that are 100% energy efficient. Donations are critical to this work